south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's start off by talking about what's going to happen in less than a week in El Salvador. That's when Bitcoin becomes legal tender in a sovereign country for the first time in history. Now, I suppose some of you have been seeing news flashes lately of people protesting in the street down in El Salvador about that Bitcoin law. What's that all about? We'll get to it in a second. So the government's also created a $150 million, what they call a Bitcoin trust. It's a setup to help facilitate the change or exchange between Bitcoin and U.S. dollars. As you might know, the U.S. dollar has been the legal tender currency in El Salvador for around 20 years now. By the way, there's an app for El Salvador. It's called the Chivo app. Chivo, C-H-I-V-O. That allows you to switch back and forth from dollars to Bitcoin without any cost at all. It's free. That Chivo app, by the way, in El Salvador, Chivo means cool. So it's the cool app. It allows anyone in the country to accept Bitcoin payments too, with just a barcode scan on the phone. So then how are they going to get all the people in El Salvador to use Bitcoin when they're so used to just using the U.S. dollar? Well, they're giving everyone $30 in Bitcoin just to download and sign up for that app. Now, the regular, poor, hardworking people in El Salvador don't give a rat's ass about Bitcoin. Why should they? But you have to remember that there are over 2.5 million Salvadorians up in the States, most of them illegals who love Joe Biden, by the way, who send back U.S. dollar remittances to the tune of around $6 to $8 billion a year. That's one quarter of the entire Salvadorian GDP. And all those billions in remittance money comes through services like Western Union and MoneyGram, who take around a 10% commission for the privilege of doing the transaction. So let's pick $6 billion on the conservative side. That means Western Union, MoneyGram, and those other crooks skim $600 million a year from the poorest, most undereducated, dispossessed people who have no say at all in the matter. They've got no other options. The thing is, with Bitcoin and using the Chivo app and the Strike app, we'll get to that in a second, there'll be a commission for remittances, but it'll be under 1%, not 10%. And you know, because 70% of Salvadoranians don't even have a bank account, that $30 in Bitcoin teaser you get when you install that Chivo app brings a gigantic section of the undereducated populace into the 21st century. Oh, and they don't have to upgrade their phones. You know, they've all got basic smartphones. In fact, at last count, Salvador's got 1.4 phones for every person in the country. Oh, and as far as El Salvador using the U.S. dollar as their currency, you know, when that happens, when a foreign country uses somebody else's currency, they've got absolutely no control on the effect it has on their economy. For example, if the U.S. economy goes into massive inflation mode, which is bound to happen soon enough, the same thing will happen in El Salvador. If the Fed in the U.S. tightens up the money supply and squeezes out investors, same thing will happen in El Salvador too. In the end, you're so much better off having your monetary policy decided by mathematics, and crypto is nothing but mathematics. Better mathematics, infinitely better mathematics, than a bunch of old, corrupt, gray-haired banker cronies, otherwise known as the Fed, making sweetheart deals for their big banker buddies and irrational Keynesian modern monetary theory decisions behind closed doors. But not everybody, you know, is happy about what El Salvador has been doing with Bitcoin. Hey, you could see that coming. Crypto people predicted that from day one. And lamestream media does nothing but spin it negatively, too. There are plenty of examples of that. If you've noticed, when they show the Bitcoin protesters in the streets of El Salvador, the headlines say there were hundreds of protesters. Well, wouldn't you know it, they used the usual suspect camera angles to make the crowds look bigger than they really were. It's a simple trick. You just take your camera and start filming at head level down a narrow area of the street where people are mostly gathered. It's the same technique biased news people used to try to manipulate the numbers during those Trump and Biden rallies and protests. Believe me, news photographers know the angles to get the desired effect. So there weren't hundreds of people there, only about 50, along with another 50 clueless bystanders who didn't know what the hell was going on. They just happened to be walking or hanging around the area. Yep, 50 in a country of 7 million. That, according to two gringo eyewitnesses I know who were actually there, staying at a nearby hotel. So do the math. Less than 1 out of 100,000 people in El Salvador showed up to protest Bitcoin adoption. Yep, the president and Congress must have been shaking in their boots. Oh, and if you look at the First World Media and what the IMF and World Bank are saying about all this, man, you got to know they always hated Bitcoin and crypto from the start. So they're totally biased against it because they know it's a huge threat to their own existence. So then what do you get from the lame street news? Nothing but negative stories and pessimism. Completely expected, though. Just check out the headlines, like the following. Check this out. Retirees in El Salvador protest against Bitcoin. How about this one? Skepticism in El Salvador runs rampant ahead of Bitcoin launch. And this, IMF warns El Salvador about risks of Bitcoin adoption. And how about this one? More of the same. World Bank expresses disapproval of El Salvador's crypto legislation. Then there's this. Moody's and Standard & Poor's hint at downgrading El Salvador's bond ratings ahead of Bitcoin launch. I mean, really, what did we expect? The World Bank, the Fed, and the IMF to praise the glories of Bitcoin? Get real. They'll never get on board. For banks and fiat currency, Bitcoin's like kryptonite to Superman. Though there are lone media voices saying things that are positive. For example, Al Jazeera. Their headline states, Central American countries consider Bitcoin and cryptos as a method to drastically cut high remittance costs imposed by agencies like Western Union. Yep, that is a positive article, but you won't see many like that. And what you almost never hear in the First World Media is how practically all the other Latin American countries have been looking to jump onto the Bitcoin bandwagon themselves. In fact, it seems every time I pick up a Latin American newspaper, there's always an article or two about adopting Bitcoin and blockchain solutions to their government and economies. But oddly enough, you rarely hear or read about that kind of stuff in the First World Media. Predictable. So believe it or not, representatives from Paraguay, Argentina, Panama, Ecuador, and a dozen other Latin American countries have set up or are in the process of setting up meetings with the very same people in the Salvadorian government who orchestrated the Bitcoin plan. Funny thing is, though, international mafia organizations like the IMF just keep dissing and wagging their finger at El Salvador, saying it's totally inadvisable. And I'm thinking, inadvisable compared to what? When 70% of Salvadorians don't even have a bank account? While the poorest of poor pump $800 million a year into the coffers of Western Union and MoneyGram? The IMF should talk. They're a criminal organization. They just continually screw over developing nations time and time again with revolving loans and strings attached so that countries can't even pay back the interest on those loans. And they do nothing about all the money they loan that gets skimmed by the corrupt bureaucrats, with only a fraction ever getting to the intended social or infrastructure projects. We all know that drill. They just hate to see any country break away from dollar dominance, which they can completely control. No one controls Bitcoin. It's completely decentralized. Oh, and this is really strange. In the First World, articles have been coming out all week talking about how the U.S. Embassy and State Department website is suddenly warning travelers to avoid El Salvador because of dangerous conditions along the Pacific Coast beaches. Coincidentally, those coastal cities and beaches just happen to be the focus of the Bitcoin community. You've heard of Bitcoin Beach. Funny, though, it's not the U.S. State Department saying you should look out for gangs, muggings, and crime. Instead, they're warning people about something that's never been warned about before. Now, I want you to hear more of that quote. It goes like this. Strong undertows and currents make swimming at El Salvador's Pacific coast, beaches, etc. extremely dangerous, even for experienced swimmers. Unquote. Yep, that's what the latest embassy alert reads. Oh, and the U.S. Embassy also says lifeguards aren't a mainstay on beaches in El Salvador, and official search and rescue capabilities are limited. The thing is, and you've heard me say this before, El Salvador's Pacific Coast beaches are on the world's best surf beach list. It's a place all serious surfers want to hit at least once in their lives. Don't you think it's quite an odd coincidence that the U.S. State Department warns against going there even to surf, and that warning coming exactly 1 week before Salvador becomes the first sovereign country in the world to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender? Could it be maybe they're trying to discourage gringo and first world surfers from coming down to a place where they'll be exposed to Bitcoin monetary freedom across the board? You know, according to Big Brother, that undermines the value of the U.S. dollar. Can't have that now, can we? Oh, and did I tell you that thousands of crypto enthusiasts from around the world have headed down to El Salvador's beaches to see what it's all about? They're curious how it's working and they want to help and give a hand if they can. Oh, and of course you've seen all over the net all that negative press about Bitcoin mining being a huge energy hog. By the way, did you know the one industry that's the biggest polluter and the most unproductive energy hog of all? Oh, and it wastes most of that too. Well, it's the U.S. military. Let that sink in. You ever hear lame street media talking about that? No. That said, no doubt it takes a lot of energy to mine Bitcoin. But El Salvador has already allocated 95 megawatts of their 100% clean geothermal energy from volcanoes to be used for Bitcoin and crypto mining. It's actually included in the Bitcoin bill that became law. So is this something new in crypto? Well, not quite. Iceland's been doing it a long time, since 2013, when Bitcoin mining on an international scale first started. In fact, it's been estimated that 8% of all the Bitcoins that have been ever mined were mined in Iceland utilizing 100% geothermal and hydropower. But maybe you might think in the case of El Salvador, it's wishful thinking, or just the usual BS attached to every political promise. Well, the thing is, El Salvador's already got engineers on it. And today they can produce about 200 megawatts of geothermal power, with 110 megawatts of additional geothermal power they can bring online, with much of it earmarked for crypto mining. Think about it for a second. If any country starts to fiat printing presses rolling like the US, it creates inflation eventually, getting to a point where it undermines the whole financial system. And with Salvador using the US dollar, they can't print extra dollars. Only those ass wipes at the Fed can do that. But tapping geopower and mining Bitcoin on a huge scale in your country is like striking oil or discovering a giant vein of pure gold on your home soil. It's real wealth creation without turning on the fiat printing presses and debasing your currency. Every debtor country with its own fiat currency eventually prints its way into oblivion. The U.S. Treasury is doing the same thing right now. But where were we? Oh, yeah. That Bitcoin remittance thing is just getting underway in El Salvador. And how's it working so far? Well, get this. I mentioned that in Salvador, people are using the Strike app, S-T-R-I-K-E. That app can move Bitcoin around, etc., internationally. Whereas the Chivo app is used internally to switch between dollars and Bitcoin. Anyway, the data's in for March, and according to chain analysis, Bitcoin transfers to El Salvador under $1,000 each hit $2.5 million already, almost entirely through the Strike app, which allows locals to cash out in their so-called native currency, the U.S. dollar. There's something that sounds not so kosher about that, when you hear a foreign third world country calling the U.S. dollar its native currency. Anyway, now the reason why the Strike app works so quickly and easily is because it's on the Lightning Network. Have you heard of it? Well, this is how it works. As for the Lightning Network, it's a separate blockchain from the Bitcoin blockchain that runs decentralized remote nodes all over the world. And when they get to a certain amount of transactions, they record them on the main Bitcoin blockchain. So it's not running on the Bitcoin blockchain, but ends up there in batched intervals. I'm sure you've probably heard that the Bitcoin blockchain is pretty slow. Sometimes it takes a minute or two or 10 or 20 to have your transaction confirmed. But transactions on the Lightning Network are nearly instantaneous and much cheaper than your plain everyday Bitcoin transactions on the Bitcoin blockchain. So when people who aren't really in the know say that Bitcoin's slow and only accommodates so many transactions per minute, and you hear people say they don't want to pay a $3 or $5 Bitcoin transaction fee when they go to McDonald's or buy a cup of coffee, those are all negatives for sure, but people who don't have the complete picture will often say that Bitcoin is so impractical for small daily transactions. It's just not worth it. They'll never get around to using it. Well, the Lightning Network is the solution to all that, and it's been around for a while now. It solves Bitcoin's low transaction capacity problem, as well as that confirmation delay problem, and much more. Just as an example, the Lightning Network can handle up to 25 million transactions per second, compared to a normal Bitcoin transaction on the Bitcoin blockchain of only 7 transactions per second. So what's that really mean? Well, think of this. Visa, V-I-S-A, we're talking about using a Visa card now. The Visa card network averages around 1,000 transactions per second worldwide. Oh, and by the way, like them or not, Jack Dorsey, the founder of Twitter, recently said it's only a matter of time until the Lightning Network is integrated into Twitter with its 330 million active users. Seems like everyone uses it except me. So as far as leading the charge for small transactions, it's being led by the Strike app right now. Oh, and by the way, all the places you can buy Bitcoin and the other cryptos like Coinbase, Bybit, Kraken, Binance, the usual suspects, of course they charge a fee for buying and trading, but they also charge a fee for transferring your Bitcoin, Ethereum, or other cryptos out of your wallet to another exchange, or to your hard wallet like a Nano or Trezor. But if you check it out, you'll find the fees to buy Bitcoin on the Strike app are the lowest pretty much anywhere, and they don't charge you to transfer your Bitcoin out of your wallet. Oh, and by the way, you know you should never keep your Bitcoin or other crypto on an exchange. In other words, you should never just let it sit there. Of course, you have to go to an exchange to buy, sell, or move it around, so you have to spend a little time there. But you should always redeposit your Bitcoin or whatever crypto you have into your hard wallet, like your Nano or Trezor. Because, you know, when you hear all these stories about people getting their crypto ripped off or lost, stolen, or hacked, it just can't happen with crypto you've got stored in your hardware wallet, otherwise known as a cold wallet. Because, you see, in a hardware wallet, your keys are in there. The keys are in your personal possession. Whereas online wallets, like the ones you set up with Coinbase, Kraken, Binance, whatever, they're in possession of your keys, not you. And there's that old saying in crypto. Well, not really that old, but old for crypto. Not your keys, not your crypto. So the only way you could be 100% sure that you own your own crypto and no one could get in and hack it from you is to put it in a hardware wallet or cold wallet. And that's why I always recommend for those of you who are dipping your toes in the crypto game that you take Captain Mango's crypto course. He goes through all the pertinent stuff and walks you through it, holds your hand. Better yet, he does some test movements of very small amounts of crypto in and out of your wallets so you get hands-on experience and see exactly how it's done. More importantly, he tells you what not to do too. So if you're interested in Captain Mango's course, and he'll also very safely buy, sell, and transfer crypto for you too. Just shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, or look down the page at my show notes that come out every week along with the show. There you'll find Captain Mango's direct contact info. Now, speaking about being scammed and ripped off in the crypto biz, you know, almost all early adopters have lost, misplaced, or been scammed out of some crypto. And in the early days, before 2015, when there were no other shitcoins, there was only Bitcoin, and people got scammed and screwed out of their Bitcoin on a regular basis. It was all new. People were just learning and making a lot of mistakes, too. By the way, that's why in around 2014 and 15, those hardware wallets like Nano and Trezor were invented out of necessity. Now, you longtime listeners know that way back in around 2014, I guess, I was talking about Bitcoin when it was around $200 or $300. And for the last 7 years or so, every single expat insider seminar I've ever had, I had at least two expert crypto lecturers at the seminar. And as a consequence, a certain number of my expat insider seminar attendees are now Bitcoin and crypto millionaires. Funny thing, though, since around 2014, when I first started mentioning Bitcoin, as it kept ramping its way up, and of course, it fell back quite a few times, too, but always ended up with higher lows and in an upwards trajectory. Well, every time it would drop back a bit, I'd get emails from people saying, "Johnny, it looks like the end. Should I sell out?" And the truth is, some people don't have the temperament to get into crypto. Some just can't take the extreme swings, the highs and lows. Though I always say you should take a chance, buy some, and stick it in a hardware wallet. Wait a few years, and if history tells us anything, it'll be like winning the lottery. So if you look at the history of crypto, especially Bitcoin, the people who have lost money in the game are ones that sold when there was a big dip. And had they just left it alone and not panicked, they'd be rolling in the dough right now. But the fact is, until those hardware wallets came along, a lot of us, including me and Bitcoin Dan and my seminar lawyer Jose, got scammed or even swindled out of a certain amount of Bitcoin. So I have to laugh when I get emails from people saying things like, "Johnny, I'm so disappointed. I bought a Bitcoin at whatever price and it dropped. And now I'm down 2 grand or 10 grand. You know why I laugh? Because all those guys and gals right now, if they didn't panic sell, are rolling in the dough. But they never send me an email telling me they're up 30, 40, 50, or 100 grand. It's often right after they've bought some and it's gone down a bit in the next couple days or weeks. They say, "Johnny, this is terrible. What happened?" And then a few weeks or months later, when it heads for the sky, suddenly everyone's happy again. All right, this calls for a personal story I never thought I'd be telling on the air. In the early days when there was only Bitcoin, Bitcoin Dan started a company that was financed by Bitcoin. It was a great plan and a great company. Ground Floor Bitcoin Enterprise. I'll highly simplify this here by saying that he put in 2,000 Bitcoin and I put in something like 50. Guess what? The company was solid and golden fine, all right. But the CEO that Dan hired, a Canadian guy, stole 2,000 of Dan's Bitcoin and 50 of mine. And the guy just packed up and disappeared. Now, remember, this is when Bitcoin was around $300 or $400. But really, if you think about it, if I really wanted to cry myself to sleep every night for the rest of my life, I could torture myself and calculate today's price of 50 Bitcoin that I lost, which works out to $2.5 million. Let me ask you this. How many people in your life do you know who've been scammed out of $2.5 million? But you know what? I don't cry about it. I don't even think about it. Well, I am today because I'm talking about it on the show. The thing is, neither Bitcoin Dan or I allocated our full stash to this guy, so we're still in the game. But think of Bitcoin Dan. 2,000 Bitcoin. At today's price, $100 million. And to think, on the south side of Chicago, they'll bump you off for a pair of Nikes. And Dan doesn't whine or cry about it either, because like I said, we're still in the game. Oh, and by the way, Bitcoin Dan's smarter brother. That's what he always tells me. He's got a brother who's smarter than he is, man. How could that be possible? Anyway, his brother lost the equivalent of a million or so bucks, too, in the same scam. Oh, and if you think these are oddball cases, take our expat seminar lawyer, Jose. In the early days, before hardware wallets like Trezor and Nano, he had his Bitcoin on Mt. Gox Exchange. You crypto people in the know, remember, Mt. Gox was an early exchange that went bankrupt. So our seminar lawyer, Jose, lost 30 Bitcoin. Today's value, $1.5 million. And he's not whining and losing sleep over it either, because he didn't have all his Bitcoin on just that exchange. The moral of that story? Don't whine and cry too much when one of your cryptos, Bitcoin or whatever, takes a big dive. That's the nature of crypto. They do it all the time. Just look at it historically. You'll find, and let's take the case of Bitcoin, it's increased on average over 200% a year in the last 10 years. And really, there is no common investment vehicle that has ever performed like that. In fact, it's the best performing asset in history. But you have to fasten your seatbelts when you get in the game because it's got wild swings. And I'm always telling people, don't put a Bitcoin or crypto app on your phone because you'll be checking it 100 times a day. For some, it's an obsession. My advice, buy some, stick it in a cold wallet, and in 5 years, there's a very good chance you'll be on Easy Street. Who knows, you could fire up your wallet and find you're a millionaire, and then walk across the street and get hit by a chicken bus. Hey, shit happens. Now, speaking of getting swindled and robbed, that happens to the best of us. For example, 3 or more years ago, me and my Latin lawyer friend Jose got scammed once again. And this time it had nothing to do with crypto. The reason why I'm bringing this up once again is because I've got lots and lots of new listeners. Especially since the last year and a half with COVID. New listeners have been really piling on. And I'm doing an unprecedented number of phone consults too. People are just itching to get the hell out of Dodge. I mean, there are a thousand reasons why. And man, are the procrastinators coming out of the woodwork. Anyway, about me and my attorney friend getting swindled and scammed a couple of years back. This is for you newer listeners who've just recently come on board. I told this story about 3 years ago, so you longtime listeners heard it already. Here's how attorney Jose and I got scammed out of over $20,000. About 6 years ago, I hired a female employee named Jen Bird, B-Y-R-D. And about 3 years ago, in 2018, I discovered she'd stolen more than 20 grand from me and my partner, as mentioned. Jen Bird stole slowly and cautiously, bit by bit, by creating her own website and siphoning off funds and misdirecting seminar clients to deposit money in her PayPal account instead of the official seminar PayPal account. And who is Jen Bird? She's an American who I later found out had worked at HP Hewlett Packard Computers in the States and was fired for unknown reasons. I have to assume she pulled a fast one there too. Unfortunately, lawyer Jose and I didn't know her full past until she'd already embezzled the dough. Anyway, she had the computer skills on her resume, and her job was to create and manage my seminar website and my Expat Essentials course website. So naturally, when I found out she'd stolen and committed fraud through PayPal, I immediately fired her. There was no chance getting the dough back, but it didn't end there. Lawyer Jose, a Guatemalan lawyer, sued her, but before he could get her in court in Guatemala, she skipped the country and went back to the States. And then a few months later, a fake Expat Files website appeared on the net. So Jose and I knew instantly whose hand was behind that. The age-old reason, revenge, of course. Revenge, of course, for exposing her and cutting off her gravy train. Now, anyone who uses the net knows with minimum WordPress skills and a $15 GoDaddy domain name, you can create any kind of website. There are many YouTube videos that can teach you how to do it in 30 minutes. And of course, people who listen to this show are way above average. They get it. They can look up the internet references to me, Lawyer Jose, and my Expat Files show. There are hundreds of positive reviews on websites, social media, and blogs everywhere. But oddly enough, one odd fake website appears in all the mix. By the way, it's been a while, but authorities are on her trail. PayPal fraud's a serious offense. In the end, though, I'm certain the 20 grand will never be recovered. Though it is a lesson in trust for all you gringos out there. Now, of course, none of the seminar attendees lost their money. In fact, most of them didn't even know about it till long after the seminar was over and I recounted the story for them. And I only did that to warn them not to answer any emails from her because I heard she was calling people and asking them to loan her some money. right before she skipped the country and went to the States. Turns out she was hitting up people for money on my email list. So the moral of that story, sociopaths and scammers can creep into anyone's life, and background checks don't always cut it. By the way, you long-time listeners have heard me say many times, practically every gringo and expat I know who relocated to Costa Rica has been ripped off, mostly by other gringos and expats. Go figure, huh? We're all susceptible, especially when we drop our guards. Oh, and I forgot to mention, she took good old Captain Mango, who's as honest as they come, for a decent amount of dough, too. She stopped answering his phone calls. So that's my cautionary tale, conniving gringo ripoff story of the month. Though in this case, the sociopathic star of the story was a gringa, Jen Bird, B-Y-R-D. So beware if you're the trusting sort. If it happened to me, it could happen to you. And that little story was mostly for the edification of all you new listeners who've come on board in the last couple of years. All right, enough of the dirty laundry. As we get to the end of the show today, I have to admit I'm kind of at a loss. I've been getting emails left and right from people up in the States and Canada saying that their employer, generally their state or health services employer, is mandating that they get the vax or get fired. And I'm at a loss as to what kind of advice I could give you, except to say all you guys up in the first world knew bad things were coming. I've been personally talking about it on this show for 11 years now. Why do you think I got the hell out of Dodge in the first place 30 years ago? Yeah, and back then everyone laughed at me. I was Chicken Little, the sky is falling. Well, the sky is falling now, isn't it? And I'm not trying to make you feel bad. All I'm saying is, it's not as if you haven't been warned 100 times that something or another, economic, social, political, environmental, a number of catastrophes were in the works, and you better get ready to get the hell out of Dodge, or at least get some boots on the ground, preferably in Latin America, and make some good contacts, like a good lawyer, get a bank account, phone, internet service, etc. So you can have a soft landing when the time came to get the hell out of Dodge. But now, with the looks of all these emails, you guys who are sitting on the fence are panicking. The good news is there's still time to get the hell out of Dodge without getting vexed. But sooner or later, it's going to be mandated by all the airlines in most every country. We can all see that coming, right? But then again, like Expat Eddie says, once you land in the third world country of your choice, no one can force you to take the vax. After all, this is Latin America. I mean, look, when you've got nurses in Mexico going door to door, asking you if you'd like to get vaxed for $30, most people go for it. Thing is, though, it's been discovered that a great many vaxes delivered in that manner and in other ways. The ampules contain nothing but sterile water. And if you don't believe me, I've got articles and news reports to prove it. What can you say but welcome to Latin America. You gotta love it.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.